Our next speaker is Harry Barth. Harry is the founder and senior managing partner of Barth Calderon LLP and is a co-author of the book Planning Today for All of Your Tomorrows. He is a nationally recognized speaker on estate, business, and asset protection planning to many incredible organizations across the country. Harry has over 40 years of experience counseling business owners and their families, corporations, and franchisees nationwide. And Harry, we welcome you to our event.
Thank you. Well. Thank you very much. Everybody working this morning on how to build a real estate and how to build our investments and how to save taxes and watch the dollars and do all those things. And I'm going to come along and tell you how everyone's going to take it away from you. So here we go. So when we talk about asset protection, I think it's really critical and very, very important. I've been doing this for 40 years. We have like 16 attorneys that work with me. And we're writing a new book called The 21st Century Law Practice, which will be available, probably in about a couple of months. That may be available to all of you. One of the things that I have a very limited amount of time with you today, maybe 25, 30 minutes, we put out some brochures that have some contact information so you can follow up with us and kind of ask questions, get a complimentary consultation. For those of you in the room where we didn't have enough, Paul and Craig are here in the back to help you with that. So let's begin with a few axioms about asset protection planning that are really important and very critical for all of you to understand. This may seem stupid, but you don't do asset protection planning after the fact. Now, you laugh. You wouldn't call the fire insurance guy and say, "Hey, fire insurance guy, the house is burning. We have inadequate fire insurance." We wouldn't call the automobile liability insurance people and say, "Oh my God, we just had a crash on the 91 freeway. There are people that are hurt all over the place. My God, we have inadequate liability insurance. Maybe we can get one of those umbrella policies." No, we don't do it. But we will get calls about the things that I'm going to tell you about today. Remember that stuff you spoke to us about on Saturday morning? Well, oh my God, we have a problem. Then I hear, "Well, would it help if I divorced my wife? Would it help if I give everything to my children? What if I give it to Uncle Guido and he holds on to everything for me? I'll transfer it to my trust." Ladies and gentlemen, very important. In order for asset protection to work and to be effective, it needs to be done while there are no problems. Understand that. Axiom number two, all right, and there are three axioms. Axiom number two, living revocable trusts. I know where this comes from. Living revocable trusts provide zero asset protection, nothing. So people will say to me, "Well, then why do I have a living trust?" Well, you did it to avoid probate. You did it to set down a game plan and a distribution program for the children, for the heirs, and for the family. But it's not an asset protection tool whatsoever. If you have properties, houses, whatever, in living revocable trusts, the same as I'm having them in your name, creditors will come and take them away. Don't know where that comes from. Next one that comes along, well, I got insurance for that. You know, I have umbrellas on top of umbrellas. So we have lots of insurance. Remember the old commercial? We all saw that commercial where the guy was walking down the street with a big red umbrella. It was a traveler's commercial. And we think that all the crap that falls out of the sky hits that umbrella and falls on the side. And we believe that our insurance policies cover us for everything that could possibly happen. Well, I'd like you all to go home and do one thing. Take one of them out and read it. Okay? And you will see one page of the things that we will insure and 65 pages of the reasons why we won't. The covenants, the conditions, the exclusions that are in those policies. And we also have this other, I don't know where this comes from as well. People will be very proud. They sit with us and say, "Oh, we have $1 million worth of liability insurance. Oh, we have $5 million worth of liability insurance." And what they're really saying to me, as I see thousands of people over the years, is that, you know what? Any lawsuit that comes against us will not be greater than the amount of coverage that we have. So when they say, "We have a million," inside their mind, it's never going to be greater than a million. If 2 million, it's never going to be greater than 2 million. Please understand, there is no relationship between the amount of insurance that you have and the amount of a judgment that can fall against you. It just doesn't work that way. I had a client very proud, said, "I have $10 million worth of liability insurance." Well, he had a $22 million wrongful death judgment. Where's the other $12 million going to come from? So we begin to build different things for a whole lot of property. But we've got to get a couple of statistics out of the way. Statistic number one. Anybody have any idea how many lawsuits were filed in the United States last year? A guess. Take a guess. You can't be wrong. Donald, how many?
5,000
lawsuits. You are wrong. One more. Kevin.
About a million.
Close but no cigar. Ladies and gentlemen, 50 million lawsuits were filed in the United States of America. Now think about it. Every divorce, lawsuit. Every criminal action, lawsuit. Every tax action, lawsuit. Every immigration action, lawsuit. Every environmental action, lawsuit, contract, tort. Every interaction with the judicial system, there's a lawsuit. 50 million of them, and 95% of all litigation in the world occurs in the United States of America. Only 5% outside the United States of America. Now, just to kick it off, before we get to some specifics about real estate, let me tell you all a story. United States is a country that has gone lawsuit insane. It used to be the rule of law, now it's the rule of lawyers. So let me just give you a little one to think about. Just wanted to kick it off here a little bit. So about 15 years ago, at Temple University Hospital in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, a gal who was a psychic needed to have a CAT scan. So they rolled her into the CAT scan machine, and they rolled her out of the CAT scan machine, and guess what? She no longer had psychic powers. So this is America. What must we do? We have to sue. We sued the doctors. We sued the manufacturers of the equipment. We sued the hospital. And believe it or not, they gave her $975,000 for the loss of her psychic powers, and we all said she should have known it before she went into the machine. Which is all true. Okay. All right. So now. So now, real estate. Today, real estate's been the buzzword today, so I will continue on that trend, but maybe just slightly differently. So we have real estate, and we talked about IRA LLCs, and we've heard the word LLCs bandied around, and 1031 exchanges. Now, here's my concern. I want you to understand that states have different biases, okay? Legal systems have different biases. There are good legal systems and bad legal systems. Now, in California, I want you to take a guess. Now, the United States Chamber of Commerce did a study of the ranking of legal systems from number one being the best to number 50 being the worst. So where do you think our great state of California falls? Take a guess. We'll try it again, though. Come on, do it. Pick a number. Can't be wrong.
50 million.
No, a number from 1 to 50. Pick your number.
35.
Wrong, but close. Okay. So California's number 48. We got a few better, Mississippi, West Virginia, got a few of them there, and Illinois, which is totally corrupt. Number 48, based upon judicial expediency, how long does it take to get a case through the system? How much can we grind you, and how many years of terrible expense and emotional cost is involved in a lawsuit? California is not the best. It's just not the best whatsoever. So now, why is that important? I want you to understand a little bit about bias, in the judicial system in California. Now, we have red states and we have blue states. Now, that's political, and we talk about voting for president and stuff like that, but it's also a bias in Arizona, you can carry guns, in Texas, you carry guns, California, you can't carry guns. All right? So they have different philosophies. Now, here's a philosophy for all of you that are involved in real estate. There's a bias in favor of the tenant, and a bias against the owner of the property. Just think about it. Any little thing that can go wrong, it's the landlord's fault. It's the owner's fault. Now, in other states, it may not necessarily be that way. They may be a little bit more fair towards the owners of real estate. Like California, a little bias in favor of the little guy. Same thing, by the way, in corporate activity. A bias in favor of a minority shareholder against the majority shareholder. They think that we crap on them from high heights, okay? So here we go. So now we're in the business of real estate. Real estate is one of the most difficult assets. Real estate has tremendous liabilities associated with it. So rarely should ever, I'll go with a blanket statement, real estate be held in our own name, perhaps other than our home. or a second home. But rental real estate, commercial property, if you have it in your living revocable trust, or you have it in your own name, or you have it in a general partnership, or you have it in tenants in common, or joint tenancy, or single ownership, you have issues. Now, here's the deal. So I see people all the time. They'll have, you know, the one rental property. They have it sitting in their living revocable trust. So let me give you an example of someone that had a rental property in their living revocable trust. It was their old house, right? Old house. They didn't sell it. They just put it in their trust. You know, they rented it out until the market was a little bit better. Now, in the house that they had built-ins, you know, like those built-in, you know, shelving and units like that. And on the shelving units behind it, there was a plug. And then next to that, there was a cable TV jack, meaning that on that shelf should go on a television. So the tenants come in, they rent the property, and they put a television on that shelf. And they have a 13-month-old girl lying on her belly watching television. Boom, the shelf gave out, the television landed on that child. The child was in the hospital for a year and is permanently brain damaged. Now, if you don't think that now, do you think we're going to get a lawsuit? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Does anybody remember who built the shelf? The question would be, oh, yeah, but maybe they put a TV on there that was too heavy. Do you think in the legal system I have a 13-month-old girl who's permanently damaged? We're really concerned about the size of the television. It was designed for television. You put a TV on and it gave out. Now the landlord has a problem. So now the lawsuit begins. All right, so now we have a lawsuit. It's in their living revocable trust. Who do we sue? The trust? The trust is you. Living revocable trusts provide zero asset protection. Where does your liability end? The net equity in that real property, my God, was $500,000. My client, or the client, was worth several millions of dollars, many more. Can they lose their house? Say yes. Anybody know what the homestead exemption is for your house in California? Well, actually, it's a little more than that. So it's $75,000 if you're single, $100,000 if two people occupy the property, and $175,000 if you are disabled or over age 65. That's it. Now, of course, you know, Texas is unlimited and Florida is unlimited, but, you know, here, that's it. So you could lose your home. Now, what if you owned a business and the business was a corporation and it has stock? Can I take the stock from the creditor? Yes, I can. Now that's gone. Where's the money in the bank account? Oh, that's gone. Literally, the liability ends with your bankruptcy. Why would anybody, and we're relying on what? Our insurance to cover that. But does insurance, what if it was grossly negligent? What if there's punitive damages? What if there's exemplary damages? I don't care if we had $3 million worth of umbrella coverage. That liability was $50 million plus. Where are we going to get the money? You have lost anything and everything that you own. So what should it have been? Simply, we all talked about it. Maybe that real estate, you know, we went, maybe we hired a lawyer, maybe we spent $800 to the state of California, and we put that real estate inside a limited liability company. We've all talked about it throughout the course of the day today. So why do you do an LLC? You do it so the liability will end, right, with the value of the property and not with your entire net worth. So if they had $500,000 worth of equity, the landlord was worth $500,000. If the lawsuit came in at $10 million, it doesn't matter. All they'll collect is $500,000, and the rest of your assets will be untouched. Now, that sounds almost too good to be true, especially in California. Now, what does a good lawyer try to do to do it? And he says, look, I'm a contingency fee lawyer. I'm getting a third of everything that goes along the way. You have an LLC, it has $500,000 worth of equity. I'm going to get a $10, $15, $20 million judgment. So unless I can do what? Get through that LLC and get to you, I'm limited. So don't you think they're going to try? So all of you may have LLCs to hold your real property. Now the next question is how are you operating those LLCs? It's not enough just to have an LLC. You need to treat it as an independent business. And this is critical, because lately, just lately in the last few years, we have the latest thing going on in California called alter ego, okay? Well, Donald, you know, That LLC, it's owned by Donald. It's a single-member LLC. He takes money out and pays Vons bills with it, pays your American Express card with it. You know, we do lots of things. It's almost like Donald's piggy bank that's funded with that piece of property. We leave ourselves open because if we allow that to go, LLCs, all the lawyers have told you what? You don't need to do books, records, and minutes, right? It's one of the advantages of a limited liability company. But maybe we should have. Maybe we should have done a resolution. Maybe we should make sure we have an appropriate and proper bank account. Maybe when, now you see the other thing? We talked about disregarded entities, right? You understand a jury and a judge in California, and you're saying, well, this LLC is disregarded, but it has to be regarded. Huh? That's what they do. They say, what do you mean? Why should we regard it if you're telling me it's disregarded? And that's a bit of a problem. Maybe we should not have disregarded LLCs because the public aspect of that is such that maybe if it's taxed as a partnership between a husband and wife, we see two people. Just things to think about. Now, people will come and say the following. Well, I have a limited liability company, and they say, well, I have four pieces of rental property, and the question is, can I put all four pieces of rental property inside my LLC? So one of the first questions we ask is, okay, are all four pieces of rental property in the state of California? Well, no. I got the two are in Arizona, one is in Texas, and one is in California. I have one LLC. That LLC needs to be authorized to do business in California, Texas, and Arizona. Now, the next question that comes about, say, the question is, can I do that? And the answer is yes. Next question is, should I do that? All right? Does it make sense? So look at it this way. If each one of those four pieces of property were worth $200,000, they have $200,000 of equity in all four of those properties, the landlord now has $800,000 worth of net worth. True? Okay? And look at the increased risk exposure. I have tenants and invitees at A, B, C, and D. So I have four times the targets against a larger bank of equity. Just to my perspective, that doesn't seem to make much sense. Maybe we should divide it in one form or another to make sure that we segregate. So it's best to segregate as much as possible. But we're talking now about inside liabilities. Now, inside liabilities, many of you are aware of. You're aware of the fact that we have an LLC and you did it to protect yourself from a liability rising up from the operations of the real estate. But I want to tell you about a different liability. I want to tell you about a liability that comes in known as an outside-in liability, and this is the one that gets you more than anything else. An outside-in liability is, hey, Donald, you're driving down the road. You're on the 91 freeway. You change lanes on a Saturday night. Maybe it's tonight, okay? All right? You didn't see the motorcyclist there. And God forbid we turn that motorcyclist into a quadriplegic. I see these cases all the time, by the way. They're not. To you, hopefully, they'll always be surreal. To me, they're not. We feel horrible. Now, with this liability to Donald caused by real estate operations? No. So, do we think Donald's going to get sued? You think Donald has enough insurance? Definitely not. Okay? It just doesn't. All right? So now we look at what? What are all of Donald's assets? Donald's assets are real estate. He's got three commercial buildings, all right, that he either owns in his own name, or he owns in the name of a general partnership, or he owns in an LLC, or he may own, sadly, and a corporation, and the accountants will explain that later. All right? So now the question is, can we take away from Donald everything that he's worked for to satisfy this claim? I'm not saying morally we wouldn't want to make sure we hurt somebody. I understand that. Can we? Well, we do know if it's his living revocable trust, it's gone. Tenants in common, gone. Joint tenancy with his spouse, gone. He's married. His wife crashed the car, community property. Gone. Now the question is, he has it in an LLC. Is it gone or is it not gone? And the answer is, it depends. If it's a single-member LLC, in all probability, under the current state of the law, it will be gone. We'll be able to reach inside and take it away. Now change it a little bit. It's now a Nevada, could be Delaware, even could be California, multi-member LLC, taxed as a partnership and structured properly. Under the law, the creditor cannot take the property away anymore. All they'll be able to do is place a lien over the distributions from that property, from that LLC. It's called the charging order. Now, can they reach inside and take the property away? No. Can they force Donald to make a distribution of the rental income from that LLC to the creditor? The answer is no. They get no managerial control. Now, had it been a corporation, I would have taken Donald's stock. All right? Now I own the corporation, I liquidate the property. But no, I don't do that. And here's the other one. Interestingly enough, who's going to pay the taxes on the money that Donald doesn't distribute? Donald keeps the rental income inside the LLC. The creditor has taken the charging order. Under a series of IRS rulings, the creditor will pay the taxes on Donald's income. Oh, maybe creditor doesn't want to do that so much. Now, one of the things that was said, so one of the things we want to make sure is there's two ways, outside in and inside out liability. So we want to make sure that they can't take our assets away that we work so hard for. We want to segregate our assets and keep them separate and done. Now, before I get into one other spot, I want to just tail back to what Karin was talking about. They talked about IRA LLCs, okay? Now, IRA LLCs, now here we got an IRA, and we just found out today we can have property inside that. So we buy two houses, okay, and we have them in the LLC and we rent them out to third parties. Can we do it, Karin? Absolutely. Okay, so here's question number one. In house number one, the TV falls off the shelf and lands on the child. Who do we sue? You sue the IRA, right? So that means, oh my God, the other house, gone. All the stocks, bonds, and cash that's in that IRA, gone. But here's the question, all right, that nobody seemed to know, but I know the answer. Can we now go out of the IRA and sue the owner of the IRA for all the liability? And the answer is yes. It's treated just like a living revocable trust under all the court cases. So that means Donald, the owner of the IRA, we get the IRA assets, then we come back and take all the assets away from Donald. Now, had, because it's real estate, I don't care who the hell owns it, created a limited liability company within the IRA, just as Karin was talking about earlier, and now at that house, the television falls off the shelf, guess what? Just the IRA is going to be liable, not the custodian, not the individual, not Karin, not you. Now the question comes in, can you be the manager of that IRA and kind of call the shots? And the answer is, yes, you can. Okay, you can't be the property manager, you can't be, you know, working on the property and doing those things, but you can call the shots in that IRA. So it's really important now, think about it the other way. The IRA. So now we have inside the IRA, you're going to hold real estate, strong suggestion, no different than you. It should be inside a limited liability company. But now, remember Donald, who's going down the freeway tonight and took out that motorcyclist. Bad night tonight, Michael. Okay. So what happened was, now the question is, can the creditor get inside Donald's IRA? What do you think? What do you think? Go venture an answer. Venture an answer, Donald. You can't be wrong. What do you think?
I'd say yes.
You'd say yes. Anyone here say no? So we have a kind of a mixed bag. So here's the deal. If it was a 401k plan, they couldn't get in. If it was a pension plan, they couldn't get in. But IRAs are not treated under ERISA from 1974. IRAs are on a state-by-state exemption basis. In 39 states, they say an IRA is treated the same as a pension plan, so you can't get in. OJ had $25 million in his pension plan, and the Brown and Goldman family couldn't touch it. He earned over $400,000 while he was in jail, and they still couldn't touch it, and they still can't touch it. Completely exempt. But in California, an IRA is, you can get into the IRA and take the assets from the IRA in a judicial determination if the court considers it reasonable and necessary to do so. California does not have an overall IRA exemption. So, if I look inside the IRA, and I'm coming down, Donald, to get inside your IRA, I want to get those houses in the IRA, what do I face? I face the LLC, which will not allow our properties to be gone. Okay. So, bottom line is that we have, by the way, limited partnerships work very well, except what's the trouble with a limited partnership if there is one? There's a general partner. And a general partner is totally and 100% unlimitedly liable for the activities of the limited partnership. So therefore, we need to have at least an LLC as the general partner of the limited partnership. If we had a corporation as the general partner of the general partnership, then someone would take the stock and control the limited partnership. So in looking at that, we need to get those things done. Now, this is just, I'm going to have lots of questions that I'll be able to take from you during while I'm on the panel, but I wanted you to just understand a little bit about real estate and asset protection of real estate. So we covered about 4, 5, 6, 7 things. But I think it's important to understand that not all real estate is commercial real estate. So we have rental, we have our homes, we have second homes, vacation properties, and things of that nature. There are methodologies that we have to protect them from the claims of creditors, but they're very different, and it's not as simple as an LLC. The last question I want to answer in the 3 minutes I have left is, you'll hear all the time, well, should I have a Nevada LLC, a Delaware LLC, California LLC? I hear all the time. So understand this. For tax purposes, you don't save one penny by using an out-of-state LLC. You still pay California the $800. What you're trying to do for the extra $300 is to get more favorable law to apply than California law. It will be heard in a California court, but we're saying we want you to apply Nevada law. And one of the reasons that we do that is because Nevada law is a little bit more favorable than California, and I'll explain that during questions and answers. So with that, my time is kind of up for the moment. Back to you, and I'll be here to answer other questions. Thank you very much.